welcome. I always say welcome like that. I don't know why. It's kind of stupid. But, hey, it's Curmudgeon's Corner.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, well, you know, welcome.
Welcome! I don't know. It's okay.
Yeah, anyway. It's Sunday, August 14th as we record this. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And we've got an exciting show as usual.
Woo!
So, we've got three main topics today. The riots going on in the UK. We got a whole bunch of stuff going on with the Republicans and the presidential race. So the bunch of small topics that'll get folded up into that one, I imagine. Then, of course, the stock market has been, you know, flailing around like a dying fish. Those are our three main topics. If we have time, we might talk about something else, too. But, you know, that's where we'll start. So, you know, page one.
What the fuck? We're now the McLaughlin Group? We need more people for that, though.
I was thinking Paul Harvey.
Oh, Paul Harvey. Okay.
But, you know, anyway.
Issue one. Okay.
Right. There you go. Riots. What the fuck is going on? All of a sudden, like, you know, there's...
Well...
People, like, burning down buildings and looting and in London and other parts of the UK.
Well, the thing is that even the British left to scratch their heads about it. I mean, you know, they don't really understand what the hell happened. I mean, you know...
I was listening to an interview on the BBC with, like... So some they were interviewing someone who was presented as sort of, you know, a young person who did not participate in the riots but understands or something like that.
What was their understanding?
And he's all talking about, you know, well, you know, it's opportunity and people saw this coming and treating people with respect and it was really fairly inarticulate, but I didn't come away with much more of an understanding of it other than, you know, these are like, is it like typical angry teenagers but run amok?
You know, you think about, you know, you talk about inequality and a whole bunch of people started talking about the baby, one of the root causes, right? Yeah. But you got to think about, remember that the UK is not exactly like the US. I mean, there is, for example, universal health care, for example.
Uh-huh.
There is, for example, a massive structure of like public housing available, for example. You know, there is a much bigger safety net for people not to be, you know, idle, you know, like, you know, miserable. Okay. All right. And like, for example, what are
Yvonne? Looks like he lost Yvonne. I'm going to pause the recording and go from there. Okay, we have Yvonne back. His internet went out, apparently.
Yes, it did.
And, fun stuff?
Yep. So, just right at the nick of time.
Yeah, we were... So you were talking about the riots. We were talking about people felt like... They were inequality, people feeling marginalized. I think one of the themes you get a lot is sort of the younger generation feeling like they're being somehow left out of British society. They don't have control, blah, blah, blah. There's some aspect here of, you know, immigration and the difference between sort of, you know, new British as opposed to people who've generations and generations, but it seems like that's a minor effect and it's mostly just economic here. I mean, you got like, you know, it's not like this is an immigrants versus, you know, other people type riot.
It didn't seem like that. No, it does not.
But it does seem like it might be sort of at least partially a class related thing where you are talking about sort of the poorer and more marginalized parts of society where this is happening. This isn't necessarily like, you know, this isn't the royal family rioting.
No, but, you know, so it just seems like somehow,
a number of people feeling marginalized. And then it was some event
triggered by somebody getting shot or something.
Right. Which doesn't happen very often in the UK. I mean, for the most part, quite a lot of police are not armed.
Right.
So, but still, anyway, even when you go and, like, because like you mentioned earlier, there were some interviews with some of the people. They really couldn't really articulate why they were pissed.
Right.
They just were.
Yeah.
You know?
And you know, I've heard a number of people saying, you know, look, whether or not they can articulate it, it's kind of important to understand what the hell's going on here to try to, address whatever, you know, problems exist that are leading towards these kinds of things. Otherwise, they'll continue to recur, as opposed to just say, well, it's a bunch of hooligans, put them in jail. I don't know.
A lot of the attitude from the conservatives has been that way. You know, and I do understand that some reaction, obviously, especially given some of the extent of the things that happen, you know, certainly, you know, requires that to an extent, but it doesn't mean that though some people reacted,
you certainly do put the hooligans in jail. The question is whether you look at anything else to try to figure out, hey, are there some sort of things going on here that lead towards an environment that is predisposed towards this kind of thing? And if so, is there anything we do about it?
That's right.
However, one of the worrying things about this whole thing is one of the reactions that's been coming out of this is people saying, well, this shows we have to, like, censor Twitter and text messages and be in a position where we can monitor all this stuff and, you know, shut down Twitter when we want to because it's leading towards this kind of – because the protesters, the rioters slash protesters, whatever, were using social networking to organize. Therefore, we need to be able to shut down social networking or censor it or do other things like that. And this is being talked about, you know, not by fringe people, but, like, by the prime minister.
Right.
And this isn't, like, you know, Egypt or Libya. This is freaking UK.
Yeah, and that also sparked quite a lot of debate. You know, that they were basically taking some of the tools that a lot of authoritarian governments have been done in order to repress them. Recent events, and that's the ideas that they had in order to try to stop something from this happening. And I mean, that obviously disconcerted quite a few people.
Yeah, I mean, it to me, that kind of trend is more worrying than anything else involved in this whole thing. Is like, you know, the reaction. If you're willing to say, okay, how do we deal with this? Well, we keep people from communicating. We control the communication flow. We make sure only the message we want gets out. That's not a trend you want in an open Western society. I'm sorry. It's just not. So I don't know how far that'll get. There's a lot of things that are being said sort of in the heat of the moment that hopefully, you know, calmer heads will prevail over time. But I don't know. The fact that you see really prominent people advocating that kind of stuff, you know, just worries me a lot. Of course, you know, you see it here, too. I mean, you talk about all the time in terms of, you know, people trying to restrict hate speech, people trying to do this, trying to do that.
And I think a lot of people are feeling like kind of like almost like ashamed about the whole situation to a certain extent. I mean, you have certain people that are on radical, you know, maybe not radical, but I think that they are advocating, you know, given what happens, certain extreme reactions to the whole situation. But I don't know if those will prevail in the end anyway, when people actually finally calm down about what happened and start looking at it a little bit more objectively. So,
yeah, I don't know. Like I said, disturbed. That's not what you want in a democratic society. And I'm repeating myself because we lost 30 seconds somewhere in there. I don't know how or why, but anyway. I really do hope that in the end, none of these kinds of actions take place, because if they do, it's the wrong direction to head in. It's opening the gates. It's Yeah, it's a ratchet effect. Just like we've had conversations here about presidential power in the U.S. The president gains more power. The president never loses powers that they got, or very, very rarely. And it's the same kind of thing whenever you have government control over media and communications and, for that matter, surveillance and all those kinds of things. You know, the UK is already a state compared to the U.S. They're like those, you know, CCD cameras everywhere. You know, you cannot like walk 5 feet without having 10 surveillance cameras pointed at you. And, with some guy in some booth somewhere in the government watching and recording, you know. That stuff's scary. I mean, I don't know. I don't like the idea of government doing a lot of that. Anyway, I think we've talked enough about the riots and we've had enough technical difficulties in this this phase. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the wonderful Republican Party in the U.S. And meanwhile, you know, London can burn. Actually, I think it's mostly calmed down now. And I'm going to move that thing that keeps making noise. Nice toy here.
What is that?
It is a toy bulldozer that my mom gave Alex. And when you touch it, it like makes noise. Okay, we'll take a break. We will be right back after this exciting message. And here we are again. A lot is happening on the Republican race all of a sudden. Well, I mean, it's been speeding up a little bit, but like this week in particular had a lot going on because at the end of the
this week was like thermonuclear. I mean, let's face it. I mean, man, do we talk about all the stuff going on?
I mean, and this is prompted at the end of the week. We had the Ames straw poll in Iowa, which is considered somewhat of a predictor for the results of the Iowa caucus in January. I saw Nate Silver at 538.com.
As my wife loves to call it, the caucus.
Yes. Nate Silver at 538.com, which is now affiliated with the New York Times, did a little analysis that basically says, looking at historical results over the last however many election cycles, the Ames straw poll predicts something like 50 or 60% of the results of the Iowa caucus. So, anyway, so, and this is just like, you know, the Iowa State Fair, you know, a bunch of people actually like pay $30 for the privilege of voting in this straw poll. So it's not exactly like, you know, an unbiased poll, but, you know, apparently it's had some predictive power. So everybody's like gearing up to that. There was a debate earlier in the week. I watched a little over half of it, to be honest. I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched a little bit over half of it and then watched some highlights and read a little bit more about it. I don't know if you got a chance to see any of it, Yvonne, but basically you had eight of the Republican candidates, you know, doing a little debate, and they, you know, there was a lot of sniping at each other. Santorum kept complaining that he didn't get a chance to talk. Bachman and Pawlenty went after each other. Mitt was there. You know, Ron Paul and I guess it was Santorum talked. You know, had a little argument. You know, so it was actually quite entertaining. There was a lot of fireworks. You know, in the end, though. Oh, and at one point they had a break, and Michelle Bachman wasn't there when they came back from the break. That was interesting.
Why? What do you mean? Where was she?
She was just late. She came in about like 20 seconds later.
Oh, okay.
She was just late getting back to the podium. So, I don't know. But it was amusing because the moderator came on and said, are we missing a candidate? Are we missing a candidate? Where's Michelle Bachmann? And then he's like, oh, there she is. So.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, I don't know. It was interesting to see because you still have at this point, like, all of these marginal candidates that nobody expects to, like, go anywhere are still there. So, you know, we have, you know, like, Herman Cain, who's the guy who used to be CEO of Godfather's Pizza. Yeah. Yeah, he's still there. He's still, like, I don't know what the hell he's doing. He's somewhat clueless. He doesn't know the answer to many questions. His wording is often confused. But he's entertaining. You have people like Santorum that nobody thinks is going to go anywhere.
He got crushed in the straw poll. I mean, he got like what? I mean, let's face it. If he's not even going to gain traction there, where the fuck is he going to gain traction?
Right.
I mean, what kind of a delusional idiot is Santorum in the first place, for God's sakes? I mean, I don't know. He got his ass fucking kicked out of the Senate, okay? All right? Even though he was an incumbent. And usually those guys have a lot of advantage. He didn't – he's never polled very well. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, and he's – you know, ever since we met him, he's been an asshole. He never changed.
You know, and probably he was very nice until he met you, Yvonne, and then he became an asshole.
Well, probably. I'm sure I probably didn't help that respect, but anyway.
We have our actual first dropout, Pawlenty, former governor of Minnesota, after the straw poll announced he's out because he didn't do very well. And he was one of the ones that people were for a long time saying, you know, he's one of the he's one of the group who might actually have a shot. He's one of the, but nope. He's been crowded out. And of course, Ron Paul is a fringe player to some degree that everybody expects not to win.
But on the other hand,
Michelle Bachmann, and they're number one and number two in this damn straw poll, and they're both polling very well at the moment too.
Well, what does this say really about the chances of them coming up with a – I mean, are the Republicans really this splintered that they are not going to converge on a candidate that really can fucking pick up independent votes?
And here's what – we talked about this 4 years ago as well. We had a bunch of candidates who, you know, different parts of the party liked, but, you know, nobody was converging on anybody. Everybody thought that everybody had fatal wounds that, like, wouldn't make them a good candidate. And, of course, the end result is they will come up with somebody. Now, the question is, do we follow the typical pattern where sort of, you know, at first everybody is, like, really hot on the sort of the ideologically pure people? Shall we try this again?
Well, you know what happened? A phone call came through.
Ah, like an actual call on your actual phone?
Yes, and I put Skype on hold automatically.
There you go. Okay, to continue, what I was saying is we'll see if the typical pattern holds, because and this has happened before. It happened 4 years ago, where you see the candidates that are more extreme polling really well at the beginning, but then at some point along the line, people start saying, okay, but who can actually win? Who can actually win? And then they start.
Well, here's the problem. Okay, I guess maybe that's why Rick Perry is jumping into the stupid race.
Uh huh. Yeah. And we'll talk about him too.
I mean, but because compared to, let's face it, Romney has way too many fatal flaws. I don't see how the fuck the Republicans can go away with
of all the people on that stage on the debate this time around, he is probably the one that actually has the best shot against Obama. Now, I'm not saying he has a winning shot necessarily, although that all depends on the economy, so who the fuck knows. But compared to, like, Bachmann or Paul or, you know, Herman Cain, for God's sake, Romney, like, you know, Romney actually stands out as like an adult. And he actually has a place where he can like pivot to the center later. Like right now, he's all in like, you know, denying he's ever done sort of reasonable things because he's in the Republican primary. But once he's actually in the election, he can be like, yeah, I did reasonable things at some point.
Well, but the one thing, but here's the problem. I mean, the Republicans all, you know, the things that I talk about is the fact that, I mean, you go back on his record, Romney, okay, specifically. He's a guy that actually raised taxes in Massachusetts. He's a guy that actually put in a health plan that is very similar to the one that that President Obama passed. And these are things that the Republicans are saying are fucking like, you know.
Death, yes.
Death! And so how the hell is he going to get the nomination when he did this shit?
Well, one of the things,
and they're trying to run against the president that's doing that. So,
One of the things to remember is like the whole Republican Party right now seems to be like really pandering to the, you know, to the Tea Partier kind of folks right there.
Totally,
but, like, but
100%.
when you actually look at the polls and stuff, even if you poll Republicans, it's only like 20-30% of Republicans who are really in that mold. Now that's a huge fraction, but like that leaves a whole big part of the Republican Party that's still potentially not at that place.
I agree, but that portion of the party doesn't seem to be as activist or as
And the question is whether those people will start showing up once we actually start voting on these primaries and caucuses.
Exactly. Right. Because if they don't, then
and if any candidate that really appeals to them can survive until then.
Listen, it will not be the first time ever that a party has undone himself and a good opportunity to win an election.
Yeah.
Basically, because they just could not, you know, agree amongst – because they were fighting amongst themselves so much that they couldn't agree on, you know, how to fight who they
– or they decide to actually – or they decide to nominate one of these actual, like, extremists. I mean, people point towards McGovern, you know, on the Democratic side in the 70s. Was that 70s or late 60s?
What? I think it was
68. 68. Whenever it was, you know, people point towards the McGovern example, maybe they actually do like go and nominate Bachman and then get absolutely crushed.
Crushed.
I mean, people say if the economy is bad enough, anybody could win. But like, you know, the economy only has to be a little bit bad to let somebody like Romney win. We have to like have complete destruction in the streets to have somebody like Bachman win.
That's right.
You know, I don't know. And we're still, you mentioned Governor Perry jumping in. He's not exactly a moderate either. I mean,
No, he's not. But he probably has.
But he's been a governor. He has executive experience, blah, blah,
right.
blah.
Right. And he's got, like, for example, he doesn't have a whole bunch of the negatives, at least to the Republicans, that Romney has.
Right. Well, and the thing is, like, lots of people don't really know him yet. I don't really know him yet. So now that he's jumped in, we're going to start hearing a lot more about him as time goes on. And
we'll find out about his hookers and all that stuff. And,
well, the one story I've been hearing the most about so far is the one, like, guy on death row who started to get some DNA evidence that tentatively indicated he was innocent. And Perry was like, I don't give a fuck. Fry him anyway. And they went ahead and killed him.
Oh, that's very lovely. That is such a sweet sentiment.
So I'm sure we'll hear his side of that story at some point in this campaign. But I don't. This is the story of the Republican race this time around. Is like in the normal course of events, the Republicans over the last few election cycles have always ended up nominating the guy who's next in line. That would be Romney. Romney is the guy who's next in line. That's why he's been the front runner so far. The question is something else going to happen here? Are they going to end up, you know, nominating Bachman or Perry or one of these other guys who is ideologically pure and see what happens? And like, somebody like Perry could win. We shouldn't underestimate. Like he's a red meat conservative, but he's got some government experience. He's been around.
Well, I don't know. I'm reading right now on some stuff where apparently Perry, my God, tried to actually increase taxes a couple of times. Holy shit.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah.
Look. Shit, forget it, man. It's like the third rail, man. I mean, forget it.
Well, here's the thing. And if you look at all of the Republican former governors, they've all got this. Because bottom line is the governors have actually had to face reality.
Thank you, my God. Jesus Christ.
I mean, Sarah Palin raised taxes, too. It was one of the primary accomplishments of her governorship. You know, and of course, we've got her continuing to play her game. She showed up at the Iowa State Fair right as the straw poll and stuff was happening, even though she hasn't announced.
She is just like one of these fucking housewives, like celebrity housewives of fucking Orange County, or like celebrity housewives of Miami, or some fucking bullshit. This is what she is. She just loves the fucking publicity. That's it. I mean, she doesn't want to run. She wants the fucking publicity, the adulation, the money.
She wouldn't mind. But she wouldn't mind part of running. She doesn't want to be president.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. This is one of those things where, like, you know, I've said before, my prediction is she doesn't run in the end. But I could certainly see her continuing to pretend to run a little longer. You know, maybe even, like, signing up for Iowa. But I don't think so. You know, and the reason why is, if she actually signs up to run, she might lose. If, on the other hand, she says, I've decided not to run, but I will use my influence in other ways to affect this race, she can continue like playing now, who's Sarah Palin going to endorse? What does Sarah Palin want? You know, all this kind of stuff. And she can continue with that kind of stuff throughout the end. And if whoever she picks doesn't win, well, it's not her fault.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Meanwhile, she can keep, like, you know, hanging on to the attention as much as she can, you know? I don't know. I don't, you know, people have pointed out that, like, you know, her niche in this race, like, the place that she would have fit is, like, being taken up by, like, Bachman and Perry. Like, You want the red blood conservative, you want the woman, you want the, you know, whatever. These guys have that covered, so where would she fit in? What would be her niche that would differentiate herself other than, you know, being her? And I don't know, maybe that's enough. It's like, okay, I'm like Bachman, but even more crazy. I don't know, but.
Well, there's certainly plenty of crazy out there, so, okay. So,
I don't know. Looking. And Newt's still there. He was angry.
Oh, yeah, Newt was angry, too. I forgot about that. Yeah, we all forgot about Newt. How did he poll in this straw poll anyway? I didn't even see him in the top five. I mean, I saw the first four, and I didn't see him there.
I don't know. We can Google it. There are people down, like, with, like,
as you can see,
silence.
Yeah, absolutely. But let me see. So, aside from all the other angry guys,
Newt Gingrich got 2.3% of the vote.
Wow.
But as people have pointed out, that is 10 times more than Thaddeus McCotter.
Who is Thaddeus McCotter? I don't know the one.
He is a member of the House from Michigan, who is apparently also running for president, but nobody's heard of him. So,
okay, neither have I. First time. So anyway, well, what about the other? What about I don't know if you did you I. Read a little bit of this about Romney's corporations or people spiel.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I forgot about that. Yes. He had a nice little argument with a heckler, I guess, and ended up, you know, going on a rant about corporations are people, my friend. And, you know, then the And then, look, I think he's actually getting a bum rap for this one, because the point he was trying to make was, people, a lot of people jumped to sort of the Supreme Court arguments that corporations are legally people and, you know, they have free speech rights and they can sue and blah, 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 things like that. That's not what he was talking about. What he was talking about is that any corporation you mention is owned by people. If the corporation makes money, those people make money. The corporation is also a bunch of employees that get money from the operations of the company, et cetera, et cetera. His point was not like corporations are people, quote, was corporations are made up out of people, and that when you affect the corporation, you affect all the people involved in the corporation, employees, owners, everything else. That was his point. But of course, the way he said it was just like, corporations are people, my friend. Yes, they are. You know, it's not the kind of thing that works well in a soundbite. Let's put it that way.
I mean, you know, it's somebody, and I'm going to quote, but those words, corporations are people, emanating from a Mr. Romilly's well-coiffed venture capitalist head, make him the callous plutocrat cartoon the listless left desperately wants the next Republican nominee to be. I'm like, you know, what the heck? I mean, it's just really, I mean, I don't know. My thing is, like I said, I mean, the one thing that I thought about the whole thing about him being heckled is just that, I mean, he just didn't handle it very well. That's all. I mean, I think you're normally, I guess a lot of people get heckled in their campaigns. I don't know. I guess it's just a little bit different about how you react and how you deal with that. So anyway,
indeed.
All right. Anything else?
Yes.
Oh, the other thing that this week was, I don't know, I mentioned this, was that Rush Limbaugh was also very pissed off about the debate in general.
Okay. Tell us about Rush, because I hadn't heard about
it. Rush went on a rant basically because he thought that Fox News was trying to sabotage the Republican Party because the questions that he asked were too harsh. And basically that made him get all into each other. And that he said that apparently that he accused Fox of trying to have the Democrats win the next election. That was his rant on this whole thing. So I'm like, okay. I don't know. You saw the questioning. What did you think about the questioning?
There were some decent questions, but I mean, I don't think they were. I've heard a number of people say that for a debate of this sort, they were pretty good questions. They didn't shy away from stuff. There weren't like a lot of softballs. I mean, as usual in this kind of format, though, I mean, the candidates just use the questions as an excuse to answer whatever the hell they want to answer. They often don't answer the actual questions anyway.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like you were having an in-depth, substantive discussion of anything. I mean, if anything, the Fox people were doing their job. That's it, you know. And maybe, you know, look, you know, we all give Fox a hard time of being, you know, a Republican mouthpiece. You know, is he stating that's really what they should be? You know.
Yes.
Cause
actually, he did. Yes.
Because usually you hear like these Fox News defenders saying, you know, well, really, you know, look, it's the opinion people on the show, but the news people really are objective, blah, 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 blah.
Well, Rush was arguing the opposite. He was pissed off that the fucking Fox wasn't acting like a mouthpiece of the Republican Party. He said that they were pandering exactly to the fucking Democrats and the critics that keep saying that they aren't.
Yeah, well, that's nice. Well, you know, look, Rush should actually be, you know, if he was actually looking out for his own best interests, he should be secretly trying to boost the Democrats as well, because frankly, you know, the market for an angry person railing about what's going on is much better if the opposite party is in power.
Well, that I will agree.
Frankly, like, at this point, Rush has his ratings have been trailing off anyway. But in general, that, you know, his ratings were highest when he had Bill Clinton to toss around. You know?
That's true.
Yeah, when you got a friendly person, then what do you have to rant about? You know, I mean, he obviously still finds things, but Anyway. Okay, let's take a break, and we'll talk briefly about this week's market volatility, and I think we'll be done at that point. No extra bonus topic for you guys. Sorry. Anyway, time for your poem of the week. Enjoy your poem. We will be back after this exciting poem. Here you go. Poem.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
The Mirror by Donald Illich. Calling yourself to the mirror, your opposite refuses to climb out of the glass, live with you, on an earth that isn't his own creation.
Daddy!
You feel that he owes you for making his image. But then you think about realities, how little you know about the mysteries, streets you cross in the dark, with signs removed
no.
by the gods. You might be the weaker
Daddy,
world,
Daddy,
the one reflecting
Daddy.
The universe.
Daddy.
You might be tethered
Daddy,
to his skin,
Daddy,
like a cart dragged
Daddy,
around by a
Daddy.
Horse that wants to leave it. Behind on the road, its passengers not understanding
Daddy,
where their lines have ended up.
Daddy.
Thinking about this only upsets
Daddy,
you, makes you
Daddy,
fall out of love with
Daddy,
life.
Daddy.
Instead, you will need to see if you can break into his realm, throwing yourself against his pain. If it breaks, you will discover there are some
Daddy,
places you
Daddy,
cannot
Daddy,
go.
Daddy, Daddy.
Do not enter, stamped across their light, a laser nailing the reflection, to a surface you can't penetrate. You will say you meant to be defeated, for this existence to be the only one you
Daddy.
Breathed with, for your turn to wave goodbye. To never be seen by anyone again.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And here we are. So enough about the Republicans, enough about riots in the UK. Hopefully we won't have any riots caused by Republicans in the US anytime soon. And the stock market.
The stock market.
So,
well, it was swinging back and forth all week like a freaking, like, you know, I mean, I don't know, like a pendulum. People got freaked out. They were selling. People got freaked out. They were buying. Then they sold. Then they bought. I mean, I was like, what the hell, for God's sakes. You know, I think in the end, here's the things that happened. Number one is, despite the downgrade, for example, treasuries, U.S. treasuries actually went up.
Yeah.
And people, I mean, you get the downgrade, and what people wound up doing was actually buying more bonds and selling stocks because they were scared. So what does that tell you about?
Yes, well, and isn't, like, if we were at a higher risk of default, wouldn't the right thing be to sell the bonds and buy something
That's
else?
Right. Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, but, like I said, I mean, you know, the decision and the way that it was done was kind of like really, honestly, there was just no sense whatsoever. I mean, bottom line, I mean, I think that the one thing about it is that, like I mentioned, was there a risk? Yes, but honestly, the fact that the political theater that led up to the debt ceiling raise was actually probably a better omen in terms of deficit reduction than a bad one. So the point that actually people if you were going to downgrade U.S. debt, the moment to downgrade it wasn't because of that debate. I mean, it should have been somewhere where, for example, when maybe they passed the stimulus, when maybe they didn't cut the troops out, or a whole bunch of other things. And I don't know, you know, it just seemed like really weird. But bottom line is that, look, everybody's fucking, all week, everybody was in a panic. Whether the French banks are insolvent, whether Greece is going to really default again, whether Spain's in trouble, whether Italy's in trouble, whether Euro's going to crack up. Bottom line is that the whole week was just fucking panic, buying and selling in every direction. Now, Now, granted, contrary to what happened in 2008, okay, there's a couple of factors that you know, were much different. I mean, you know, there were ups and downs on this. I mean,
not just downs.
It was not just down, okay? So, you know, and we'll see what happens this week. I mean, I don't know. But people, let's face it, a lot of the things that made people get freaked out are still
true.
You know, true. But there was some better economic data that came out of the U.S. at the end of the week in terms of employment and other stuff. One thing, obviously, that collapsed, and why would you be surprised? Consumer confidence plummeted. And consumer confidence plummeted. Well, you put the combination of the downgrade, the whole mess in Congress, the threat of a default, and all of this shit. I mean, why would you be shocked that consumer confidence, you know, went down? But retail sales were up in July. However, one of the things that they said about retail sales going up is a big part of it was that oil kept going through the roof and gas kept getting more expensive. So therefore, that's why what it was. But let's face it, oil this week, because of all the economic worries, freaking plummeted. The only two things that really went up this week, well, I guess three. One is Apple, which, by the way, became the most valuable corporation in the world this week.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw that.
I did see that.
Number one. Number two was gold. And number three were treasuries. U.S. treasuries and Swiss francs and yen. Everything else, they sold. But if you think about this, the yen, they were buying yen. The Japanese are twice as much as a U.S. in the first place. And they're buying yen. So, I don't know. Basically, it was wacky. That's all I can summarize it.
Well, and you know, I'll just give my meta comment for the time being that, like, the fact that, like, markets like this can be quite this volatile, you know, in the absence of real new news. I mean, like, there was news, but, like, there wasn't new news every day of this magnitude. You know, it's just another indication of how, you know, the whole thing really is just, what's the right way to put it? It's all based on a house of cards. It's all speculation in the end. It's all, you know, people aren't trading things based on their intrinsic, objectively measured value. They're betting. They're betting on, you know, whether it'll go up, down, or sideways. And that inherently leads to volatility. And over time, eventually, it leads to big crashes. It's just the nature of the beast. So, I don't know.
Well, one of the things right now in terms of the big crashes is that people are holding on to cash. I mean, cash in different areas, corporations and other areas, is like at all-time highs. I mean, so, you know, I don't know. You know, look, bottom line is that I think that in the U.S., risk got significantly reduced, okay, even with the problems of the debt. Europe, who knows? Everybody, I think, is just freaked out about Europe. And I don't know. I think they're freaked out about the euro cracking up. And as long as, you know, every week is another, you know, bad news bears scenario from Europe, I mean, it's just going to keep shit like this going on for a while. So, anyway.
Any other major comments on the economy?
Predictions? So what do you think about the whole thing about Apple actually becoming more valuable than Exxon? I mean,
to me, I don't know. Should I repeat my comment about the markets being irrational? I don't know. Obviously, Apple has had a lot of success. They're doing really well. They've got a lot of cash. They're selling stuff hand over fist. Their products are well desired.
Apple will probably have, out of the $348 billion of net market value that Apple has, like, by the end of this year, $100 billion of it will just be cash.
Yes.
Okay? Just I mean, you know, so
but
just cash.
But does it really make sense that they're the largest company in the world? I mean, are they the largest company on a lot of other metrics, too, or just market cap?
They are about to surpass HP as becoming the number one in revenue in the IT industry. Okay? Mm-hmm. This quarter will probably mark that. In terms of profits, actual profits, because, you know, some of this stuff has to reflect with growth.
Yeah.
They're in the top 10 right now in terms of profitability as a corporation. Okay? So that is the driver. The driver has been the amount of cash that they've amassed with the profitability they've been showing each quarter. I mean, it's just – I mean, they are making so much money every quarter right now. It's just – I can't. I mean, you know that I've been an investor a long time in the stock. I can't believe how much cash they're making. Okay, all right. I mean, it's bonkers. Okay, I mean they are four times as profitable right now as General Electric, for God's sakes. Exactly. Okay. I mean, geez. The number is just. I mean, you look at the numbers and you're like looking at the P&L, you're looking at the numbers. I'm like, really? I mean, Jesus, really? They're making that much money? You're like, I mean, it's just, you're like, holy fuck.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we'll see how everything shakes out.
Like I said, if we had a Nostradamus of technology, let's face it, 10 years ago, Microsoft was making money like that way, in a direction that way, and look what happened to Microsoft. I mean, it's not like Microsoft has fallen off a cliff. I mean, like, but let's face it, they did not continue growing in that sense. I mean, and the other company that's a main competitor to Apple is Google, okay? But here's a problem I looked at. Google's profitability over the last 3 years has barely budged. And the reason is because right now, Google is spending almost twice as much in R&D as Apple, but yet – a lot of this stuff is fucking self-driving cars and shit and stuff. And
in the end, they still only make their money through advertising.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas Apple spends half as much.
Although, you know, if you had a self-driving car, the person in the car doesn't have to see, so you can put ads on the windshield.
That would be interesting. Maybe you could put the ads so the passengers can see them only. There you go. Okay.
All right. That's whatever. You know. Well, come on.
I saw this car, by the way. I don't know if you've seen this, but there is this display, by the way, that they're making for cars right now. I saw it. It's on a Range Rover, a couple of different cars that you have the display in the middle of the driver and the passenger side, mm-hmm. and the driver sees one thing on the display, but the passenger sees something completely different.
Yeah, I've seen those. Those aren't new. They've had those around for a while. But maybe they made it better.
No, but they made it better. They put it in a car. I mean, uh-huh. I didn't realize. So you're talking about this. Well, they could show the ads to the passenger and the driver, you know.
Well, I still say it's a self-driving car. Driver has no reason to see out the window. You just say, yeah.
Well, apparently they didn't want to crash last week or something.
We notice you're going to the grocery store. You know, would you like a hooker? I don't know.
But I heard that one of those cars crashed this week.
Yes, one of them crashed. It was a fender bender. It wasn't like a, you know.
Well, even if it was a fender bender, still anyway, that whole thing about, okay, I guess not minding the wheel isn't really working that well.
Well, you know, they're still working on it. They're still working. I mean, they've been working on it for like 30 years or whatever.
20 years?
Yeah, not Google specifically, but in general, self-driving cars. But, you know, they're working on it. It'll get better, you know, and there certainly will be a point where you can hop in your car, tell it where you want to go, and then lay down and take a nap.
But you see, look, let's face it, they make aircraft that can do that, okay? Let's face it, I mean, you could program a plane, be on the runway, put your course, I mean, you could go, take off, do the cruise, and land at the other airport, and you still, I'm sorry, but I still want to be looking out the window to make sure that nothing happens. Not for nothing.
I don't know, I am sure the first few times I'm in one of these things, I will be nervous as hell and will be looking out. But at a certain point, you'll build up the confidence and you'll be like, you know, I'm going in the back and make a sandwich.
Okay. All right. So Sam is looking forward to making sandwiches while in his self-driving car in the future. So, all right. On that note, I think we can end.
I was actually going to – one more quick note on perspective.
Oh, one more quick note. Okay.
This
yes.
is 10 seconds, but like we were talking about the Republicans. You remember a while back a cobra escaped from the Bronx Zoo? Do you remember this at all?
Yes. Yes,
and,
I remember.
And so somebody set up a fake Twitter account that was this cobra's adventures.
Okay.
This was posted on Andrew Sullivan's Daily Dish, which is one of my favorite blogs, but he pointed out for perspective that if you combine the number of followers of the Twitter accounts for Michelle Bachmann, Mitt Romney, Tim Pawlenty, and Ron Paul, together, they have fewer followers than that cobra.
Oh, that's really sad.
Anyway, that's it. Thank you for joining us for an exciting episode of Curmudgeon's Corner. All the usual crap. You know what I say. Email me, ablesmay@ablesmay.com. Tell your friends. Listen again. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.